The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case 56. Jinshan's one arrow point smashes three barriers. The pointer. The Buddhas never appeared in the world. There is nothing to be given to people. The ancestor never came from the West. He never passed on the transmission of mind. Since people of these times don't understand, they frantically search outside themselves. They're far from knowing that the one great matter, right where they are, cannot be grasped, even by a thousand sages. Right now, where do seeing and not seeing, hearing and not hearing, speaking and not speaking, knowing and not knowing, come from? If you're unable to apprehend clearly, then try to understand inside the cave of entangling vines. To test, I cite this old case. Look. Chan traveler Liang asked Jinshan, "How is it when a single arrowhead smashes three barriers?" Jinshan said, "Bring out the master within the barriers for me to see." Liang said, "So then knowing my fault, I must change." Shan said, "Why wait any longer?" Liang said, "A well-shot arrow doesn't hit anywhere," and started to leave. Jinshan said, "Come here a minute." Liang turned his head and Shan held him tight and said, "Leaving aside for the moment a single arrowhead smashing three barriers, let's see you shoot an arrow." Liang hesitated. So Jinshan struck him 7 times and said, "I'll allow, as this fellow will be doubting for 30 more years." The verse. "I bring out the master within the barriers for you. You disciples who would shoot an arrow, don't be careless. Take an eye and the ears go deaf. Let go an ear and the eyes go blind. I can admire a single arrow point smashing three barriers. The trail of the arrow is truly clear. You don't see?" Zwansha had words for this. "A great adept is the primordial ancestor of mind." So good morning. Good morning to those of you at home. We've been having a Kyudo retreat this week, so I just couldn't resist. I was saying to Honen how we have for so many years each year been having you and others who are not here this time coming to do this retreat. So it really feels like a part of the Sangha returning. And it's interesting how things that we do, programs that we do, become part of the body of the place. So, the pointer says, "The Buddhas never appeared in the world. Nothing can be given to people. The ancestor didn't come from the West," referring to Bodhidharma. "He never transmitted the mind to mind. Where do seeing and not seeing, knowing and not knowing, thinking and not thinking, feeling and not thinking come from? Look inside the cave of entangling vines." This language that comes up over and over again in Mahayana teachings, the sutras, dialogues, which is obviously pointing to dualities, pointing to the ways in which we see things, think of things, believe things to be. And what is really being said? You know, the teachings are in a way, in their, maybe to think of it as, in their attempt to be so direct, so penetrating that they enlighten our mind, that they have an economy of language. There's an economy of language, right? How to say things in the most direct way. And what that does is it brings that directness, that power, but it also sets up the great likelihood of misunderstanding, of taking these words just at face value. And so it's really important to appreciate that, in a sense, all the teachings are never to be taken that way, not in any absolute way. That they're always just doorways into greater inquiry. What is he saying when he says the Buddha's never appeared in the world? For it seems like they certainly did. What does it mean that Bodhidharma didn't come from the West? Because it seems like he certainly did and passed on the transmission. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, there's the moment when Manjushri and many of the Buddha's disciples went to visit Vimalakirti, who was sick. And as Manjushri walks in the door, Vimalakirti calls out and says, "Manjushri, welcome, welcome." He says, "There you are without coming. You appear without any seeing. You are heard without any hearing." What is being pointed to here? A reality, a direct experience that exists within each of us, that is our natural mind, and that is a liberated mind. And that's the key. It's not just about some obscure or mystical experience somewhere to be had, and then what? But that it is in that there is a liberation of seeing and hearing, a liberation of coming and going. And in order to understand that, we have to understand, what does that mean when Buddhism talks about coming and going? What is that actually referring to? He says, if we're not able to see this clearly, then just try and understand it from within the cave of entangling vines. So entangling vines, you already know, right? They're the vines that entangle you, each of us. Our seeing, our knowing, our thinking, our feeling, our planning, our worrying, our attachments. But doesn't that just raise the question, what actually is it we're entangled in? In feeling bound, what are we bound by? What is it that seems to hold us back? What is the point or the source of our confusion? We all have the experiences of being obstructive. We have difficult memories, strong emotions. We give or receive harsh words. We have challenging relationships in our lives, difficult situations. And all the while, you may just want to get through your day. Simple and easy. But you wake up grumpy, on the wrong side of the bed. What exactly does that mean? Wake up grumpy, feel a little irritable. Making a cup of coffee, you break your favorite cup. You trip on the stairs, you can't find your keys, you're going to be late. You get to work and there's some bad news waiting for you. It piles up. But what is it that is piling up? We're definitely having an experience. The frustration level rises, the anger rises. Everybody gets sort of painted with a target. What's actually happening? And so he says, right at this moment, right at that moment, where do seeing and not seeing, hearing and not hearing, speaking and not speaking, knowing and not knowing, where does all of this come from? We have an experience, there's something going on out there that seems to be the focal point, that seems to be the object of our irritation. But no matter how adept we are at remedying that, it just keeps happening. A thought comes. It wasn't there a moment before. It comes. Now it exists. Something is there. We see it, we understand it, we react to it, we develop it further, and then at some point the thought goes. Something has gone. It was there, and now it's not. It existed, and now it doesn't. And that simple fact, that simple event that we have over and over again, millions and billions of times, and even as practitioners, we see it happening, but do we really see what's happening? Do we understand what is actually happening before our eyes? What is happening in our mind? Do we see this miracle of consciousness? Do we see the arising of our suffering? Do we understand where it's coming from? And even that question can set us off looking in the wrong direction. Because, of course, if something wasn't there, and now it is, it exists, well, we want to know where did it come from. Because it had to exist before. We didn't see it, but there it is now. And when it goes, we don't see it anymore, but it has to still exist because it exists. It's there. I saw it. I thought it. I reacted to it. And that event, that action, in a sense, is the whole catastrophe. That in coming, it seems irrefutable that it is something. It exists. I know it's my thought. I know somehow it's related to my mind. It's coming from my consciousness. It seems to arrive from somewhere. It persists, so it has a kind of lifespan, just like we do, just like every living thing does. And then it goes, it dies. It goes somewhere. And so there's this sense of something that exists, that has its own nature, is independent. Even though I know it comes from me somehow, I'm reacting to it as though it's something that has its own being. It's somehow part of me, but it's also apart. Because why else, when it comes up, would it seem to elicit or create a reaction in me? They're just words. So these words that come up, I feel good. These words that come up, some of the same words, turned around a little bit. These words come up, I feel bad. I'm just sitting here, minding my own business. So what is happening? Where is the power? Is it in the words? Is it in the meaning that the words have? Well, we can't, obviously, that can't be denied. So in the point to when it says, where do all of these things come from? And in a sense, it's where, what do we think? What do we believe? What do we understand to be actually happening in this moment? And what does this have to do with ourselves? And so, how is it when a single arrowhead smashes three barriers? What are the three barriers? It doesn't say. Greed, anger, delusion, past, present, and future. The three forms of desire, sensual desires, existence, non-existence. Whatever you want. Three of them, 3,000 of them, 3,000,000 of them, all of them. Is there one single arrowhead that smashes three barriers? Is there one direct path that disentangles the entanglements? And Jinshan says, bring out the master within the barriers for me to see. Footnote says, he comes on directly. He wants everyone to know. Indeed. He goes right to the source. Bring out the master within the barriers for me to see. So what is he saying? Within the barrier. So this is one of the many revolutions of the Buddha Dharma. Right? When there is so much happening outside of us, so much madness, so much attachment, so much greed, so much anger, so much wrongdoing, so many madnesses. So much to see, so much to blame. Where's the entanglement? Is it out there? Bring out the master from within the barriers. You know, as part of the it's part of what we have to come to in practice is realizing that within a world in which there is so much wrong, there's so much that needs to be corrected and addressed and attended to and evolved. There are so many who are acting foolishly and hatefully and violently and deceptively, and there's so many who are attached to their opinions and their beliefs, all of them, not us. No, we're the good guys. So in a sense, blaming sometimes, putting responsibility where it needs to be is what we have to do, right? To correct a wrong, to address something that needs to be addressed, to change something that needs to be changed. And the Buddha said, can you do that without hatred? Can you do that without vengeance? Can you do that without pleasure, gaining pleasure? Can you do that just to mitigate a harm, just to bring forth a good? Just that. Can you do that without self-clinging? Can you do that without attachment to a goal? And so to begin to deeply, profoundly take responsibility for our own lives is, in a sense, all of Dharma practice rests on that. And it happens in steps, it happens by degrees. We move forward, we move backwards. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes we see clearly that that's what needs to happen. Sometimes it doesn't seem to make sense at all. And what does that actually mean to take responsibility? Knowing my fault, then I must change. What is this fault? In sitting zazen, in meeting the master, in going to the source of samsara, in going into the source of liberation, in coming face to face with the primordial ancestor of mind, to take responsibility, right? And recognizing that our own karma is so bound up with the lives and the actions of others who have affected us and on many occasions have not acted on behalf of our well-being, have not cared, have not been compassionate, sometimes have deliberately wanted to hurt or to subjugate or to make invisible, and to recognize the truth of that. And so then what do we take responsibility for? What is it that actually resides within this body and mind that is the barrier to bring out the master within the barrier? But when the Buddha said that karma is what belongs to each of us, how we are responsible for our desires, our intentions, our words, our actions, and their consequences. Recognizing that all of those are profoundly influenced by all of those forces, social forces, family forces. So in a sense, we all have a mutual responsibility to each other. And yet, in the moment of desiring, in the moment of speaking, in the moment of acting, the action belongs to me. The result is my responsibility. And that is the seat of our capacity to effect change, to liberate. And the middle path means that it's not dualistic. It's not all you. It's not all other. It's not some balance between. It's the whole thing. Dogen said in the Guidelines for Studying the Way, once you see or hear the true teaching, you should practice it without fail. One phrase offered by a loyal servant can have the power to alter the course of a nation. One word given by a Buddha ancestor cannot fail to turn people's minds. The unwise ruler does not adopt the servant's advice. And then he goes on to say, one who does not step forward cannot accept the Buddha's teaching. If we do not step forward, we cannot receive the Buddha's teaching. If you are unbending, you cannot stop floating along in life and death. If we are unbending, then in a sense we are committing ourselves to a continuation of before. If appropriate advice is not heeded, then governing with virtue cannot be realized. And what I hear in his words is, it's you. It's me. I'm the one who has to step forward. I'm the one who has to bend. I'm the one who has to listen. I'm the one who has to receive. And what prevents that from being very narrow and confined and ultimately self-centered? It's all me. Examining this mind, bringing out the master within the barriers, and really realizing when I bring out that master, all of you are there. Past, present, future, everyone's there. Everything is there. When Buddhism teaches, when the Yogacara teaches that every experience we've ever had, the seeds or the imprint of those resides within our deepest consciousness. Nothing is lost. Everything is present. Just consider that. And it's there and it has influence. It has impact. And it has impact depending on how we live our lives. The Buddha said, when somebody says something and you respond angrily, I respond angrily, the only way that can happen is because the seeds of that anger are already planted within me. Otherwise, there could be no response of anger within me, which means I have already not only experienced anger, but I have cultivated anger. I have had faith in anger. I have nourished anger like a seed in a garden. And the more readily it comes out, the easier it comes out, the more I have nurtured that seed. And so what happens when we consciously and skillfully and steadily don't nourish that seed? Well, Buddhism says it never disappears. So in a sense, that idea that if, you know, if we become enlightened, then we're sort of vaulted into this enlightened heaven where all is good and you are all good and nothing bad is ever going to happen again and you are never going to do anything bad again because you're all good. That's a fantasy. That doesn't exist in anywhere. That doesn't exist except in our fantasizing mind. And so that when we do Zazen, when we focus on our breath, when we learn how to face very energetic karmic results, this thought stream, this emotion, this memory, this desire, the greater the energy means the more force it has. which means the more power it has had in our lives, which means it has great potential to continue having power, to continue to act as though it is the master, and we the servant. But it also, because of that very same power, has the potential to shift, to free us, to be freed. But we must step forward. We have to step forward into that. And so the Buddha said, careful, because what you have already learned in such a moment is to suppress or deny or ignore or avoid, right? You have those skills down. Everybody knows how to do that. And having done that many, many, many times before, they're ready, right? They're just like waiting at the door just to be called, ready for action. Or on the other hand, to believe in this and to believe in it in another way. Because in denying it, we are strengthening the fact that, yes, you are true. Yes, you are valid. Yes, you are me. The other way of affirming its existence is to fall into the narrative of it. Take it further. Build on it. And so the Buddha said, at that moment that you realize you're on that pivot and teetering, avoid both of those extremes. Just that. Just that. Just don't avoid. And just don't grasp. And you ask, what do I need to do now? You don't need to know. You will know in that very moment. You will be that very thing. That is stepping forward. That is bending. And so the virtue of pliancy, of resilience, of flexibility of the mind, very important. I mean, just think about, you know, in a very strong sort of state in which we're caught, we are the servant to the mind, to the emotion, to the memory, right? How taut that is, how rigid, how narrow that is. You know, it's easy to get discouraged in practice. I've been talking to meeting different students this week who each in their own way brought that up, being discouraged by what's going on around them in the world, being discouraged by what they might be seeing in themselves, in their own lives. And they're, you know, that's understood. I mean, there's pretty much, as far as I can tell, nothing that we're going to experience that the Dharma hasn't already anticipated. You know, it's sort of like you go to a restaurant and it's like, whatever you want, they've got on the menu. Right? Whatever we're experiencing, yep. 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 That's all already been addressed. That's already been spoken to. There's already teaching. Going back to the beginning. And so there are lots of teachings about discouragement, about it. And when we see a teaching that is pointing to something like that, it's because that's what happens. Practitioners get discouraged. Otherwise, there wouldn't need to be any teachings about it, right? So when you see a teaching on something that you're struggling with, be comforted, right? Not only that that's there for you, but you're not the only one. Seeing hatred, seeing violence, seeing deception, seeing just basic foolishness and stupidity. It's easy to feel discouraged, to feel like, I don't know, maybe, you know, we just can't do this. We can't make this thing work. Maybe we can't live together. Maybe we can't manage those darker aspects of ourselves. Maybe we're just too smart for our own good and not smart enough. And so that's why there are practices, because in that mind, In that state, where's the master right at that moment? What is the master? What have we placed in the position of the authority? Who is in charge actually right now? In that moment of being discouraged, who is deciding what you see and what you hear and how you see it and hear it? Who is directing where you put your attention and where you don't? And so Jinshan says, bring out the master from within the barrier. Take responsibility now. When we see the world getting narrower and narrower, is that the world? When we see the world painted as one color, one quality, right? One delusion, is that true? Or has our vision just become very, very confined? And so there are practices to address this, practicing the four immeasurables, right? To bring your mind to being free of suffering, to happiness, to gladness of heart and sympathetic joy, to equanimity, means you're summoning forth, you're bringing forth into your mind and your consciousness, into your feeling body, other qualities, other realities, other objects, other people. You know, I was watching a clip of a gymnast, a female gymnast who had been in the Olympics before. I think she wasn't on the team, an American USA team this year, but they were interviewing her about the current U.S. team and specifically about Simone Biles, who had withdrawn from some events. And the newscasters were talking about the medal and winning and competing and the pressure and the, you know, all of that. And she was addressing this, and she was like, I think, a 24-year-old young woman. And she said, you know, yes, all of that's there. I mean, we're athletes. And I said, of course we want to win. Of course we want the medal. But, you know, actually, that's not the most important thing. She said, the most important thing is, what kind of people are we? Are we kind? That's actually the most important thing. And it was like, and the newscasters were like, they smiled and then they just plowed right past. Yeah, but the goal, the pressure, the winning. And I thought, you guys bow down to her right now and ask her to repeat that if she will, because I don't think you heard it. Delusion is not a mistake, it's not an error, it's not a sin. It's really a very logical response to living in this human body in a world of abundance, streaming in through our senses, and perceiving them as coming and going, perceiving them as existing. Here one moment, gone the next. Impacting, having influence, seeming to have their own power. It makes sense that we see the world from a deluded view in the specific and rather colorful and volatile way that we do within the deluded view. That's why it's universal. It's a logical result, and all of the suffering that we create is a logical result of experiencing things as existing independently and acting independently, because by definition, it sets us apart. And having been set apart, we will be set against, if when the conditions are right. And it doesn't take much to make those conditions right, but you know what? It doesn't take much to create different conditions either. So then, knowing my fault, I must change. And Jinshan says, why wait any longer? Indeed. Why wait any longer? One who does not step forward will not accept the Buddha's teaching, will not hear them. If we are unbending, we cannot stop floating along in birth and death. Why do I keep falling into the same patterns? I'm not bending. What does it mean to bend? Study the Dharma. Do your zazen. Learn how to bend. You already know. You already know. Like, that's just a given. In fact, we've already been doing it. We couldn't have gotten this far if we hadn't been. But now let's step it up a bit. So then Liang says, a well-shot arrow doesn't hit anywhere. The words may sound clear, they may be true, but are they true for Liang? That's really the question. He may understand what he's saying. He may know that it's true, but does he know this? Jinshan wants to find out, so he grabs him and holds him tight and says, let's leave aside all of this complication for the moment. You, shoot an arrow. He brings him to the spot, puts him on the spot, tries to cut off all intellectual reasoning and logical arguments and clever words right now. You yourself shoot one arrow to penetrate the three barriers. You yourself bring out the master. And so he hesitates. There are so many moments like that in life, so many moments in practice. I mean, if I had a log of all the times I went into Doksan and Daido, my teacher, asked me a question or challenged me, and I hesitate. Stuck. Nothing is flowing freely. And then leaving the Doksan, it's like, ah! Too late. Not too late. Not too late. Nothing has been lost. For a practitioner, nothing is ever lost. Nothing will ever be gained. There is now. And we use it well, and sometimes we don't. And then there is now. And there is now. It continues, you see. You disciples who would shoot an arrow, do not be careless. And so there is meticulous effort in practice, which is not nitpicky. It's just meticulous. It's attentive. It's careful. It's not careless. It's awake. Vimalakirti said, sickness arises from total involvement in the process of misunderstanding, from beginningless time. I love this passage. Our delusion arises from total involvement. We are totally involved in our delusion, right? I mean, we're the master of ceremonies. We're the center ring. We're the show. We're the MC of the whole thing. Totally involved. And there are lots of people helping us along. Total involvement in the process of misunderstanding from beginningless time. It arises from our attachments that result from illusory mental constructions. Right now, what am I hearing? Right now, what am I seeing? Right now, what is the source? Who is the master? Where is the obstruction? What is suffering? And so Vimalakirti says, when we when we go beyond seeing, we realize that nothing is ultimately perceived which can be said to be sick. There is no self in this body, in the skandhas. And except for arbitrary insistence on the self, ultimately no I which can be apprehended. I love that. Except for an arbitrary insistence, a rather persistent arbitrary insistence. I insist. In a way, you know, when we cling to our grasping, or when we let go and then we run back and pick it up, or when we're settling to our zazen and it freaks us out and so we make ourselves busy again, it's sort of like saying, no, I insist. Shantideva said, deep though I is my desire to free myself of suffering, I find myself going back to the source of it over and over again. I insist that I suffer because that is, I am such a person, right? I can read you my story. I can tell you all of the ways. I can point to all of the reasons. And there is truth to all of that. Buddhism doesn't deny any of that. And right now, you're alive. And suffering is not necessary. It is a result of total involvement. So I'll end with a poem. One arrow liberates the many barriers. A single barrier is not freed by 100 arrows. Having pierced the one, still others seem to appear. So become at ease with shooting and not shooting. Either way, you were never standing apart. The primordial mind is fresh and new today and always. Because it's large and boundless, all the sickness, all the medicine live peacefully. Like fireflies in darkness, dancing together in the summer night sky. All living peacefully together like fireflies in darkness. That was the Buddha's realization. That is Prajnaparamita. That is what we speak of in a rather clinical way as the non-dual. Then why is there so much lack of peace within sickness and medicine? Bring out the master from within that very question for us all to see. That's what practice is. That is the direct path.
Thanks for listening. Looking for in-person practice opportunities? With the easing of pandemic quarantine restrictions, Zen Mountain Monastery and the Zen Center of New York City are once again open for group meditation, services, residency, and retreats. We'll continue to offer online programs to our Sangha near and far, even while we host more in-person events for all those able to travel. You can find all upcoming activities listed on our website, zmm.org.